I always saw in Swami Kriyananda's life a complete willingness in any moment, in any circumstance, to share Master's teachings and to talk to people about Master. I remember once being in a bookstore, the Metropolitan Mall in Gurgaon, right after we moved there. And we were standing in front of the section of books and included Autobiography of a Yogi. And some Indian man that Swami'd never seen before pulled the book off the shelf and was just looking at Autobiography of a Yogi. And with the most touchingly childlike enthusiasm, Swami turned to that man and said, "I was his disciple." Just like that. And Swami was already elderly at that point, but if you had just recorded his voice, you would have thought he was about 10 years old. And the man didn't quite know what to make of it, and they had a slight discussion. It didn't go as far as it might have gone. So it was less about the effect that Swamiji had, and more a feeling in my heart of how how uninhibited Swamiji is in his devotion to God and Guru, and how completely unconcerned he was about whether other people understood that or not. Of course, if somebody picks up Autobiography of a Yogi, that's an obvious moment to speak of it. But I also learned from him to aspire toward that kind of complete confidence that this is what God has given us to do, and we know what we're doing. And Jesus said, "Don't throw your pearls before swine." So it's not as if we impose it upon people, though I remember in 1972 or 73 when Swami was giving a lecture in Reno, Nevada, and he took a crowd of us up with him to help publicize it. And in retrospect, I understand more what he was doing. At the time, I didn't really understand it. For some reason, we thought it would be magnetic for us to all be dressed in Indian clothes. And then he had us actually sitting in front of the Kmart in Indian clothes doing kirtan. I don't lead kirtan, so Haridas was with us. Haridas was leading the kirtan. I didn't really find out until years later that this was a fairly traumatic experience for Haridas. He's more retiring by nature. I thought it was just a lark to be sitting out there doing something so just beyond reason, you know. But it was a little harder for him. It's just he's shyer by nature. I'm more theatrical. But at the time, I know what Swami was trying to get us to do. You're doing a good thing. You're doing something really wonderful with your life, having given your life to Master, having dedicated your life to building these communities. We were monastics. We were really dedicated to this path. Just because the people going in and out of the Kmart thought we were loony didn't really have anything to do with what we were doing. And, you know, looking back on it, I really understand what he was trying to get us to understand. Remember the story about Master when he was walking across the stage in front of hundreds of people and he was bringing a glass of water to Master, and he tripped on the edge of the rug, and in front of everyone, Master said, "You clumsy oaf," like that. And everyone in the room started laughing at Yogananda, laughing at Master, because his guru had reprimanded him in front of everyone. And Master, as he describes it himself, he just stood there and he looked at them and he thought, "Not one of you has what I have received from my guru. You know, go ahead and laugh. What does it mean to me? I know what I'm doing and I know what I have received. And no amount of mockery or misunderstanding by this world can touch that. I mean, this is the spirit of the martyr. This is the spirit of the Christians being thrown to the lions. This is the spirit of all times when Jesus being crucified. You know, these people of no consciousness, except that everyone is divine, but these people of no consciousness turn on him and crucify him. And all he does is pray for their salvation. Father, forgive them. They have no idea what they're doing. And he weeps, and he weeps for them because they have no idea what they're doing. And Master's life. Master came to America. He, for a time, wore his orange robes and his long hair, and he had a message. And that message was the path of self-realization. And that message was his own consciousness. When he left India, Master gave him a double blessing. Master Sri Yukteswar gave him a double blessing. He said, wherever you go, you will find friends. Which Master said, even in this land of materialism, I found friends. And in some of his talks, you know, at Christmas and on his own birthday, he says the words like, I never imagined in this land of materialism that I would find such dear and dedicated souls as all of you. But look at the family Master has given me. And then the other blessing that Sri Yukteswar gave him. He said, a divine power will flow through your eyes and it will draw people away from their material life into a consciousness of God. And then Master writes in the autobiography, both of these blessings have been fulfilled. But you see, that's what Master was doing. He was teaching, he was giving lectures, he was healing, doing healings, he was doing amazing demonstrations of his power. He founded an organization, he did so many different things. But what he was really doing is what Sri Yukteswar blessed him to be able to do. A divine power would flow through his eyes, and he would draw people away from their material preoccupations into the consciousness of God. And all evening as we've gone from master to master, that's all we've been saying, each in its own way. We need to draw our attention away from our material preoccupations into a deeper consciousness of God. You see, it gets very, very simple. And we should be exceedingly unhesitatingly strong in that commitment. There are times to speak and there are times to keep silence. I also knew about Swamiji. It was very interesting. You see, he never had any egoic compulsion to be the center of attention. And so whereas when we would have ashram functions and satsangs and so on, he would completely dominate. But if he was anywhere where people were not interested in what he really had to offer, he would just be very quietly silent on the side. You know, just look like somebody's grandfather who wasn't much interested in the conversation. Because they didn't want what he had to give, so he didn't give it. Master came to this world with an extraordinary message. I mean, Master was sent by Babaji and Christ, trained by Sri Yukteswar, because Christ and Babaji are in constant communion and they're very concerned about the direction of society and they're very concerned about the explosive, violent potential of expanding technology without expanding consciousness. So Master came with the power of God in his eyes to draw us from material preoccupation into awareness of God's presence. And Master writes that unity and peace and harmony will not come from any other source except a gradual dawning of awareness of the unifying power and presence of God in everyone. It's not going to come through political systems. It's not going to come from social justice. It's not going to come from any of those things. It's going to come from a dawning awareness of the presence of God in everyone and the implications of that. You know, already in the few decades that we've been alive and the few decades of my life experience with Ananda, I jokingly said in a radio interview, you know, when I started with Ananda, we were either the leading edge or the lunatic fringe, just depending on your point of view. But much of what was considered so radical then is absolutely ordinary now. Organic foods, natural living, closer to nature, earthing, healing yourself by putting your feet on the earth, and of course meditation, yoga practice. It was so far out. Now it's not far out at all. And the day is going to come. Perhaps some of us will live to see it, perhaps some of us won't. When the rest of what Master brought begins also by the same strange, unquantifiable, impossible to chart method, which is simply the transformation of consciousness. As just one by one, the power of God flows through the eyes of the Master and flows through the eyes of those who are in tune with the Master. And it draws people away from their material preoccupations into the consciousness of God. And the more each of us embraces without reservation faith based on our actual experience of what this path means to us and what this path therefore can mean to anyone else who has the same longings that we have, then the more Sri Yukteswar's blessing of Master will be Master's blessing of us. And it's through our eyes, because where else will it come from? St. Paul never met Jesus. And I've often just contemplated this, but he was so utterly persuaded of the power and truth of the message of the life of Christ, of his death, and especially of his resurrection, that no power on earth could dissuade him from that. And no personal hardship, no insult, no denigration could turn him away from that task. I have a message, and I'm going to share it. And the whole world was changed by that. It was really Paul's conviction, one person's conviction. We are not St. Paul. We are not called for the same destiny. But the way we expand our own self-realization is to be an instrument of it for others. And this is where Swami Kriyananda's role in our lives, however you define it, is central to our understanding. Because you see, if you don't have a living example of what it looks like to succeed at the endeavor we are all trying to succeed at, then it's too easy to become confused and to be influenced by the wrong forces and to, however sincerely meant, create the ideal after our own image rather than creating it after the true image. And that is among many other reasons why Swami himself never, until the end of his life, allowed himself to be considered a guru. At the end of his life in India, he stopped resisting and simply accepted what was obvious to too many, but only insisted at all times that he was a disciple. And even when he was accepting what was appropriately offered to him, still was always as a disciple. In Master's name, I will help you. Because we need to understand the wholehearted nature of that commitment and see it expressed, you know, day after day after day after day, where everything is about how can I serve my guru? How can I, through my eyes, be his eyes? Swamiji told us, you know, after he wrote, especially after he wrote The Essence of Self-Realization, which was now he wrote many, many years ago, where he had to write down Master's words as he remembered them. And he talked about the process of writing that book and how his thoughts, he couldn't tell which were his thoughts and which were Master's thoughts anymore. He'd become so completely integrated into the consciousness of his guru. Imagine. You know, it's it's not hard for most of us to tell which thoughts are ours because it's not likely that Master would have those thoughts. But just like Master said to Swamiji when he acted the part of Jesus in a tableau for the Masonics, because he had a beard and most men didn't in those days. Master said, "How did it go?" And Swamiji said, "Oh, well, I'd rather actually be Christ than just look like him." "Master," he said, and what Swamiji said struck him so deeply was the extremely matter-of-fact way Master responded when Swamiji said, "I'd rather be like Jesus." "Oh," Master said, "that will come, that will come." Just like that. Looking at us, I mentioned I had, you know, I spent hours with Bert and Caroline Silva, the people from whom we're buying this farm, who find themselves after a lifetime of work, stone broken, bankrupt. Very difficult position for them. But the more I sat with them and talked to them, and it wasn't anything they said, the more I realized the soul's long journey. It's just the soul's long journey, and there's nothing to lament about any stage that the soul has to go through. God's hand is in everything. And that is the only message worth offering. Sitting with them, I knew that they were Catholics and they had a statue of the Mother Mary of Fatima because they're Portuguese. So I said very little. But once or twice, I said, "I believe in God." And both of them were able to say, "We believe in God. I believe in God. And I don't know what this is about, but somewhere, you know, you'll know. God is with you. He's taking you somewhere. I don't know where, but he's taking you somewhere." When you feel that, you can do anything. Without that, everything is difficult. So what greater gift can we give than the gift that Master has given to us? Why do we know this? Because Master had the power in his eyes to draw us away from our material life into a greater consciousness of God. He gave that power to Swamiji. Swamiji has passed along that experience to us. And if we would grow in that consciousness, we have a holy obligation, not necessarily to change any circumstance of your life. You just be the government accountant that you were born to be, as Lahiri Mahashaya was. But when you look at anyone or anything in this world, remember Sri Yukteswar's blessing to Master and ask that that blessing be given to you also. "Through my eyes, Lord, may your presence shine that I might draw others into an understanding of thee." A very dear friend of ours died about 2 nights ago. She was a hairdresser. She often cut Swamiji's hair. And in fact, I've been passing out to you and over here, for those of you who don't have it already, fragments of Swami's hair. Thanks be to her, because she cut his hair for years and saved it for me and gave it to me afterwards, because I knew in time it would be very valuable. She died courageously of cancer. She was the same age as we are. She was a hairdresser. But that woman was always helping somebody. I just have rarely seen anyone. Whenever you go and have your hair cut, there would be some other story about who she was helping. You know, and just an old woman who needed a ride to the doctor, her next door neighbor who needed somebody to talk to, the owner of the shop who needed a little, you know, hand-holding. It was just like she couldn't ever look out at the world without thinking, "How can I help?" And, you know, she practiced Kriya. She was very devoted to Swami. She loved him deeply, and he would always say to me, "Call Kay and make sure I can get a haircut." And, you know, she was a salt-of-the-earth kind of gal. And there she was. We visited her just before she died. She was like, she said to Karen and David, who were friends of hers, "Master said he'd be there and he'd better keep his promise," just like that. But you know, that's who we're really meant to be. Master said he'd be there and he'd better keep his promise. We said, "Say hello to Swamiji when you get there." "I will, I will," she said. Just But you see, she had that in her eyes. She loved God, she loved Master, she loved Swamiji, and she behaved accordingly. That's all that God asks of us. It's really very simple and exceedingly joyful. Nothing like nothing else. So, let us meditate. And let me make it just a little more clear. In this basket over here and on this table, we actually thought this year we would also put candles on Swamiji's altar, so two candles if you like. And we have there, when he died in Italy, Narayani, who was the woman who took care of him at the end, she gathered up the things he'd actually been using in that last week of his life, and she gave them out to us. And so there's a shirt that he was wearing and the slippers that he wore that last week in there. Eventually we'll put them in a suitable place in our temple, but they're there. And in the basket is a little plastic bag that has a little bit of Swami's hair and a fragment of one of his blue robes, and also small pictures of him that David lovingly touched to Swami's foot in the casket when we were in Italy. Many of you already have these things, but if you don't, feel free to take them, or if you need one for someone that you know isn't here who wants it. So now we'll begin.